Hey, good night, everybody. Welcome to Money and Skills with Dallin and Michelle. ¿Qué tal, mi gente? Bienvenidos a Money and Skills con Dallin y Michelle. The premier podcast del mundo. Almost. No estamos en el mundo tan pronto, pero falta un poco, pero vamos para allá. Just a little bit longer. We'll be there just coming in hot just in a little bit. But welcome to Money and Skills with Dallin and Michelle. This is episode 6, the season finale. The season finale of Money and Skills with Dallin and Michelle. Michelle, how are you feeling tonight?
I'm feeling great. It's been a week of many lessons and we're doing good.
Awesome. Yeah, it's been a heavy week on my side as well. Challenging. But you know, this is what we do. This is what champions do. We they throw hard stuff at us, and you know, we don't break. It hurts. I'm not gonna front and tell you it's all fun and game that it feels good. I won't lie to you and put. I'm not gonna do the Instagram motivational post on you and be like, you know, these are not the people you want to mess with. I'm like, No, don't mess with me. Please don't. I prefer if you don't. If you do, we'll deal with it. But I prefer that you don't. But it's been a crazy week. But we're here rocking out for the final episode of Many and Skills with Dallin and Michelle for this season. And what we want to do tonight is really give you a recap of some of the things we've been talking about. We talked about a lot of stuff. I was telling Michelle just in the pre-show that I forgot some of the things that we talked about when we were kind of reviewing the different topics that we went over. A lot of gems in there, a lot of solid information, useful information. I think that's one of the things I'm proud of most with this series is that it hasn't been a lot of, I don't know, philosophical, esoteric, feel good. No, it's just like practical steps you actually need to go out and do tomorrow or Monday or start this weekend. Practical things you can actually do, whether you're trying to improve your career, get paid more money, build generational wealth, become a subject matter expert in different things you're doing. So much stuff out there that I really encourage you to take the time to scroll back through the episodes here, whether it's on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook as well, correct? Are we on Facebook? I think we're live on Facebook. Facebook as well. Scroll back through there and check out the gems that we've been dropped over the past couple of weeks. And I'll share a couple of highlights here. Some of my favorite ones that we've talked about, at least from my side. And Michelle, maybe you can do the same. Share one or two of your favorite gems that we've talked about over the time here. I know for me, coming from the money side of things, I know one episode we went in, it got a little bit technical, but I do think it's one of them that's really worth going back watching. And this is episode we were talking about. If you can find the episode number for me, this is when we were talking about the accounting stuff, like really going in and understanding the numbers and the debts and the ratios and that kind of stuff. I think it might have been episode 3 or 4. I can correct me which one it is. But that one, I think you should definitely go back and check out. Why? Because if you're trying to be better than everybody else, if you're trying to get paid more, if you're trying to understand how the money line works, and that was talked about as well. If you're trying to understand how this money line works and how you get in position to get paid, whether at your company or in front of your clients, if you're doing an entrepreneurial thing, definitely want to go back and check out the episode, especially even though we went in on that episode on a lot of the technical terms. This is the stuff, this is the nitty gritty stuff that real leaders, real powerful business people understand. I'm not saying you have to go out tomorrow and become a CFA or a CPA or whatever it is, but trust me, when you sit down in front of real business people to do deals or you're going to pitch to an investor, if you know these numbers off the top of your head, if you understand when they ask you about a certain ratio, what they're really getting at, if they ask you about your inventory turnover, you understand what they're really asking you is how long is this stuff going to sit on the shelf before it gets sold? Or they ask you about your attrition rate. That means they're asking you about how long does it take before someone quits your company or gets fired. They ask you about your debt to equity. You want to understand what those things mean, at least on a high level, so you understand the question behind the question. So definitely go back and check those out. We also talked from the money side about learning how to monetize you. And this is a very powerful one that came out there because I found a lot of folks are out there and we have great ideas. We have great potential, right? But we don't fully understand either how to tap into that potential, how to package it, and be ready for sale, or we don't know how to communicate it, or we're afraid, we're shy. You don't want to toot your own horn. But let me tell you something right now. The people who are getting paid, they're tooting the heck out of their own horn, right? Until you have the money to pay a marketing company and do all this stuff, this is what you have to do. And it was a buddy of mine who's a musician. I think I saw, what was it? I don't know if it was Drastic or one of my musician buddy. He said one time, he's like, listen, this year I'm trying to build myself up as an artist and I don't have a third party marketing agency to talk about me in the third person. So I'm just going to talk about myself. If you don't like me talking about myself, just get off my feet because this is what it's about to be. I'm about to be promoting and self-promoting the heck out of myself. I don't have the budget to pay, you know, whoever it is to talk about myself. So you got to really get comfortable, not just talking about yourself in a gloating kind of way, but being comfortable saying good things about what you're doing and communicating your story in a way, right, that doesn't just speak well of you, but in a way that demonstrates how you're prepared to add value for someone to someone else, or how you're adding value to the marketplace, right? I think that's the way you kind of spin off the shame of, like, oh, I don't want to talk about myself. Yeah, I'm talking about myself in regards to making things better for someone else, right? This is what I can do for the market. This is how I can add value to you. So definitely check out that stuff as well. And through all those episodes, like I said, I don't want to waste a whole bunch of time going through all the details, but trust me, you want to go out there and check it out. We're talking about how to figure out your niche and how to solve specific problems in that niche, and the kind of studying that you need to do to make sure that you're better than the average person, and even a lot better than the good people in the thing that you're trying to do. We're talking about how to turn up the volume even and communicate what you're doing to the market instead of just being amazing but invisible. You know, I think my friend, what's her name, out of Montserrat and Trinidad, her name's going to come back to me. She's going to kill me right now. I'll find it before the episode is over. She has a visibility challenge going on right now. And I'll find her name and put it in the show notes.
You did talk about her.
Yeah, I don't know what. Yeah. You're right. I'll look it up before we're done here. At some point when you're talking, I'll zone and find it. I don't know why her name is escaping me. But she has a visibility challenge going on right now that I think is amazing, where she's talking to all of us professionals out there creatives who are doing these things in our heads or in our bedrooms or in our closets or whatever, these amazing things that we're doing, but we're afraid, like me, to get on camera. We're afraid to go on LinkedIn Live, YouTube.
Six episodes in.
Still alive, you know. I still hate you, Michelle, for dragging me on camera live. I'm not gonna lie. I don't, you know, I'll get over it in a couple of weeks here. But you know, six episodes in, five black t-shirts in, right? You get that joke on episode two after Michelle fussed me out for looking too hot. You know, she wasn't ready for the executiveness. She said I need to tone down the executiveness for these nighttime podcasts. But six episodes in, and you know, I'm learning how to accept turning up the volume, so to speak, and putting yourself out there and sharing the value that you have. So I want to encourage you from the money side, especially, just go back and check out the gems that we've dropped over the past five episodes, and even this episode as we're going in here. And Michelle, what are some of the highlights you want to share from your side? I know you dropped a whole load of bombs about becoming a subject matter expert and all the different things that you have going on the skills side. What do you want to share that you think was some of the highlights from your side?
Well, I'm really excited that I was able to continue the Keep Your Stride narrative that I have going on, that focuses on stats, being teachable, intentionality, being able to develop yourself, and research and engagement. So all of that was tied in throughout the season, which I'm really excited that we were able to do and connect it to making, like, keeping your skills recharged and connecting it to money. I think for me, some of the highlights was definitely this me conversation. I love that one. And I say that all of them led to the need to be consistent with whatever you do, you need to be consistent. Yeah. With your efforts. And I know me personally, I am going through a stretch right now, like this stretch of being consistent. Like, I've challenged myself right now to put some type of content out on a 4 days a week. And that has been a journey. So it's the whole creative and digging deeper and being transparent and sharing my story and sharing the why and things of that nature. So what does that look like? What does that mean? And keeping your skills going. So how are you presenting yourself? What is professional for you? What skills are your top skills? What skills do you need to improve? Things of that nature. And I think all of that comes together. And as we're talking about money and skills, because ultimately you are looking to create the life that you want for yourself. And that takes confidence. That takes understanding that you need to be developed. That takes you owning the greatness that is within you, that people and companies and entrepreneurs, you are someone that they want to work with. But what is that? What is that skill? What is that? What makes you the person, that industry person? Yes, we talked about niches and that's great, but it's also beyond your niche. It's like, what do you contribute? Finding the value. Like, I did a post today about episode five, and it was like, being confident in the value that you bring, whether someone sees it or not, are you pressing forward to make sure that your value is seen? And regardless of what someone else may say, what does that mean? I know for me in project management, a game-changing conversation for me when I was helping someone else through Career Tipper was I had always had an interest in project management. All my roles have been predominantly business development, career services, retail, along that. And I know that I always had wanted to transition to project manager, a project management role. And like when I talked to different people when I was working in different other companies or just finding my way and when I was interviewing for roles, I was kind of always shied away from project management, but everything I looked at it, it just resonated with me. I'm like, this is what I want to do. So for me, the conversation was completely different. The game-changing conversation for me was with Aisha Watkins, the founder of Women of Project Management, and she broke it down. She broke down every myth. She broke down every bit that got in my way that made me feel like it wasn't that. And sure enough, I have been a project manager, and I was caught up on the fact that you need the certification to be deemed a project manager. And that's not true. That just positions you to be viewed for different projects that's the requirement for, but to be able to, I'm like, a mom is a project manager. Dallin, you are a project manager, right? So there are different people that you already deem yourself, but no one had that conversation of clarity. So what I really hope that this season, our first season of Dallin and Money and Skills with Dallin and Michelle, is that this season served as like an Aisha for me, for you who's listening or watching and checking out the whole season, whether you check it out today, you check out the replay, or you check it out 3 months from now, that it brings you clarity to what it is you bring to the table, for what it is that's the greatness in you, for what it is and how to move to the money line. I think many people, your episode down about the money line was a game changer for a lot of people. And what did that look like? So am I working near the money line? Do I have the skills that can put me toward that? And how do I make sure that I stay along it? Or if, what does that mean? And it was just a great conversation with a lot of people offline that were like, hey, what is, you know, I need to really dig deeper. So yeah. I think for those that did reach out to us, that was like game changer. And we talked about the skills from that aspect. So another thing that really comes to mind for me when I think about your skills and your money and things of that nature is mindset, right? So your mindset, how are you dealing with things? How are you addressing things? How are you moving forward to make this like a reality for you? And one thing that happens to many people, not everyone, but a lot of people, and I'll definitely be one of those people, my hand is raised, is the imposter syndrome. It attacks you at any given time. I know that some people right now are saying the imposter syndrome should not be the imposter syndrome or whatever the case may be. Like, I'm not really sure, but people do have doubt and people do have fear and people do second guess themselves and they can be reluctant sometimes and what that means. So it could be you not applying for a job sometimes because you're not sure. You have 80% of the qualifications, but that 20%, you're like, oh, I'm not a right fit. Please go ahead and apply, right? Or please message the recruiter on LinkedIn and network and follow the company and things of that nature, or submit the proposal anyway for the client. The thing is, whether you get it or not, you put yourself in the game. And usually, if you apply to programs or you apply for a proposal and you are not chosen, most of the time, not all of the time, you're getting some type of feedback.
Yeah.
And that feedback can help you reassess, re-strategize, and put you back on another level. So that's totally important.
I think the interesting thing about the quote-unquote imposter syndrome is that it doesn't, I wouldn't say it never goes away, but it's able to be present at all the levels. So let's say you say, oh, I'm not at whatever certification or whatever level. I'm not at this level 5 or whatever. You get to level 5 and now you're feeling an imposter because you're not at level 6. You get to 6, you know. I mean, the first time I saw this was a friend of mine who was a professor in academia. He was explaining, he was like, look, man, this academic thing is a rat race. Because first, you know, you're in grad school. You're getting your master's, you're a minion. You're just like, you're there. and you're not important. In grad school, you're not allowed to actually have ideas. You can only summarize other people's ideas and make sure you put the reference. Then you get to like doctoral student. Now you're able to have an actual opinion on things, kind of, sort of, but you can't really say anything because you're not, you don't have a doctorate yet. Then you get a doctorate, then yeah, but you haven't been published in a scholarly review or reviewed article or journal yet. So you can't really talk yet. Then you get published and people are like, well, you know, that's not really one of the prestigious ones. Then you get in a procedure and like, well, you know, I have 5 articles in a procedure. Then you do that. Like, yeah, but I have a book out. Then you get a book. Then it's like, oh, I have five. It's just like, there's always a reason for someone or for the situation to make you feel like you're not enough. So I think one of the ways I'm learning, I try to stay away from saying just I've figured it all out, but I'm learning to deal with this stuff is accepting that there's different levels of greatness and being at level X of greatness and not at level Y, or being at level 5 greatness and being at level 6 doesn't mean you're not great, right? It doesn't mean that you're not worthy of bringing value to the table and getting paid and this and that other. Because you're not worth being paid $1 million, it doesn't mean that you're worth zero, right? There's space in there. Like, it's okay to be at a $500,000 level now, even if you know you want to get to that million, right? You're working toward it, and you can't let that that imposter syndrome or that those doubts and so on, I'm preaching to myself here, beat you down to the point where you're so frustrated that you can't do what you need to do and put in the work that you need to put out and put out the work, as in visibly put out the work somewhere for somebody to see it, that you need to, so that you can grow to that level. So that's the first thing I think I noticed. One of the things I definitely noticed about the imposter syndrome, as you were mentioning it there. So it's always there, kind of nagging. It's possible for it to always nag. So I think the sooner you stop trying to worry about getting rid of it altogether and learning how to work with it or work through it, I think that's one of the most freeing moments you can have.
Yeah, it's all about progress over perfection. And what does that mean, right? So yeah. I found this really good article on the Muse about the imposter syndrome, and I'll put it in the show notes for everyone so you can just look at it.
And there's about five,
yeah, so there's 5 levels or 5 different personas of the imposter syndrome. So one is the perfectionist. So have you ever been accused of being a micromanager? Do you have great difficulty delegating? When you miss an insanely high mark on something, do you accuse yourself of not being cut out for your job and for that day? Like, do you just like melt down? And do you feel like your work must be 100% perfect or 100% of the time?
Yeah. The funny thing, I'm listening to those. And I'm like, yep. Hello. It's one of those moments you're reading that through, and it felt like when you're at church and you're like, is the past? Was he? Did he see me at the club last night? Did he talk? Are they talking about me? Did somebody? It's like, what's that? Did somebody message him a picture? I don't. You just kind of start shrinking down. No, this stuff is real, man. This stuff is real. And I think the saddest part, or one of the saddest symptoms of this imposter syndrome, or especially the perfectionism and so on, is when you let the fact or the thought that whatever it is you're going to do is not going to be as amazing as you want it to be. You let that idea or that fact, maybe it is not going to be as amazing as you want it to be on day one, you let that stop you from starting at all. Right? You let that stop you from doing anything at all. And I think that's one of the most crippling moments. I try to go back. I had my first saxophone teacher. He reminded me one time I was frustrated about something, other project I was going to do that was non-musical, and I didn't want to put it out there. He said, man, you remember when you didn't give a damn? He said it in different, more colorful language than that, but he's like, you remember when you didn't give a, I thought, what are you talking about? He's like, you remember that time when you would have been playing saxophone for, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, and there was this random concert and you were like, hey, I want to get up on stage and bust it. And you sucked. I mean, I had just started teaching you. You probably knew like 3-4 notes. So we literally found a song that only required 4 notes. And you went up on stage and did it anyway, like you were Kirk Whalum or something, because you just didn't care that you didn't sound that good. You just ready to go. It's like, where is that dude? Bring back that dude. Because that's the guy that got you to where you are now, playing on stages for Oprah and this. And that. If you didn't get to that phase where you're willing to suck and go up there and just be like, hey, this is where I'm at right now. Hope y'all like it. Let's go. If you don't, I'll be back better next week. You know, if you're not able to do that messy phase and start ugly, you're not going to get to the hot stuff. And I think even from doing this series, I think we've seen the progress and the fruits of that, just being more comfortable, realizing that being live on video on the internet, you know, is not a death sentence. Well, I'll see how I make it through this episode and let you know how it goes.
Well, I think another thing to remember is that you have to extend grace to yourself, right? Extend grace to yourself. That means patience. That means recognizing your achievements. That means acknowledging what you got right. And like we're saying right now, the growth. And what does that mean? Like, what were your ahas? What were your takeaways? What did you learn? Did you strengthen a business relationship? Did you understand, did your communication improve in a way that you didn't? Are you surprising yourself with your own growth? Like, recognize that for the perfectionist. The second one is Superman or Superwoman. So if you're not sure if you are that person, here are some questions for you. Do you stay later at the office than the rest of your team, even past the point that you've completed the day's necessary work? I know that has applied to me. Do you get stressed when you're not working or find downtime completely wasteful? Like you're always looking for something to do or you're judging yourself, right?
Yeah, relaxing can be stressful for me sometimes. I'm just like, I feel like I need to be doing something else. I gotta, guilty as charged.
Yep, have a whole family to enjoy. So it's all good.
My wife is not watching this.
And have you left your hobbies and passions fall by the wayside and sacrificed them for work?
I'm just gonna head out right here because this is too much.
Do you feel like you haven't truly earned your title? And I think that happens to a lot of people.
Whew. Yeah, this. I don't know. Can we go to commercial? I just feel like
no commercial break.
Man,
no instrumental, nothing, no 2 minutes, 2 seconds, none of that.
Let me sip on some of this tea. All right, yeah.
I feel like the whole title piece that comes down to so many people, like they minimize that their time in their position, or their time in the industry, or their degree, or the school they went to wasn't an Ivy school, or it wasn't this school or that school, or whatever the case may be. But you have a degree, you put your time in. You become a SME, or you understand your role, you cultivated your skills. All of that is time well spent. And you need to acknowledge that it's time well spent. And don't let anyone make you feel like it's less than, because there's no glory in being a workaholic. You need to celebrate yourself, celebrate your wins, and what that has brought to you to be able to experience, and let it catapult you to move forward to the next level of excellence that you're looking for.
Yeah, one of the people I really admire if you follow her on LinkedIn, Jamila Abston Mayfield, no, Miss Mayfield, I'm sorry, she's married now. I had to get that right. She's one of the people I always admired from years ago. We worked together in my early days at Ernst & Young, now EY, way back when I'd just come out of college. I think she was actually one of the people that recruited us straight out of college at Morehouse. She might have been on that same recruiting team for the Atlanta office. But always admired her grit, her drive, just sheer raw intelligence. You're talking about somebody who just knows their stuff, works hard. But the thing, the other side of it that impressed me is that she always knew how to have a good time. Like as much as she was going hard in the office, when you look at her feed, like, she's where? What? Okay, she's on vacation. You know, she knew how to cut loose and just relax. She could be as intense at the office and as intense when it's just time to relax and have a good time. And I've always admired that with her. And I got a chance to sit down and chat with her on my podcast episode. I'll drop the links to that in the show notes as well. I think it's a really powerful one for especially women who are out there trying to do this balance between being super professional and still trying to have a life and keeping up with all the stuff. I mean, she became one of the youngest partners, if not the youngest partner in terms of age one, and also just amount of time. Worked with the SECE, Securities and Exchange Commission, came back to the firm, became partner. And one of the things that she talked about was how she does this balance. And she's talking about work-life balance. And one of the tips that she gave that always stuck with me, she said on vacation, she would do a couple of things. One, it has to do with your leadership skills and how you manage your team, like the rules and the directions that she gives her team. So she said when she goes on a vacation, one of the things she does is that her team knows that there's a code word. So for example, whatever your code word is, like if you need me to read this email urgently, put urgent in all capital letters in the subject of the email. If you don't, I might read it, but I'll read it later. I'll read it when I get a chance. I'll check it out when I have a time. If it's something like the house is about to burn down, put that in it and I will actually get to it more urgent, more quickly. The other thing she said she does on vacation, and she said all her friends and her family know it, is that she doesn't want to come back from a 5, 6, 7 day vacation or whatever it is, or 2 week vacation, and have 1,000 emails to go through. And it's just, you know, you're just totally disconnected from what's going on. So she said what she does on vacation is that she dedicates, granted she's higher up in leadership in the firm, she dedicates, you know, 1 hour a day, right? Even on vacation, or 30 minutes, or 1 hour, it doesn't have to be 1 hour continuously, but she dedicates 1 hour, maybe it's in 2 30-minute blocks, to checking in on what's going on. And she said for her, it's easier to kind of skim through and put out a couple of quick fires, see what's going on, touch base, okay, this is what, give some little quick directions, and do that once a day, and then disconnect, than be trying to disconnect completely, but you're constantly in the back of your mind, like, oh my gosh, I don't know what just happened. I saw a notification, I don't know what's going on. I haven't checked in with the team in a week, whatever it is. And she said, when you do that, and she was explaining in the episode that when you do that, one, it empowers your team because they know that you are not afraid to give them responsibility to keep the house going. But it also makes them feel comfortable knowing that you haven't completely detached and abandoned them. They know that there is a lifeline. If they really, really need you for something, they can reach out. And by doing that, when she gets back in the office, she's still in the flow of things. She's still keeping up with things. And that's how she's able to keep that balance of knowing how to have fun and still progress and keep up with the professional stuff. I think that was a profound tip that she gave that I've actually found useful. I've done it now in the last couple of trips I've done. And it's been very, very useful.
No, that's great advice, especially for someone trying to, air quote, balance it all. So that's awesome.
Yep.
So thank you for sharing. The third one is the natural genius. So they judge their competence based ease and speed as opposed to their effort. So in other words, if they take a long time to master something, they feel shame.
Mm.
So are you used to excelling without much effort? Were you told frequently as a child that you were the smart one in your family or, you know, amongst your friends? Do you dislike the idea of having a mentor because you can handle things on your own?
Well, finally, something I'm not guilty of. I didn't have the this comes easy to you lifestyle at any point in my childhood. So yeah, this one I'm used to putting in the work. I'm not used to things just, you know, being good just because I'm good at it. No. Finally, I can sit back and watch someone else squirm in their seat. But this is a serious one. I think one of the things we underestimate is we see people that are amazing. And or you've heard it before, we see the highlight reel, or in Instagram terms now, we literally see the reel. And we don't know all the work that went in behind the scenes. I mean, I saw the closest I've seen to it is when I've seen friends of mine who are serious musicians. When you go to like really serious, intense music camps and that kind of thing. I mean, I've seen in person, the ballerina with the toenails falling off, or I mean, there's been times in the music world where we've decided we're practicing and you practice until, I mean, like you come up and there's blood inside your mouth from playing the instrument, but you, like, people don't see that. They just see like, oh my gosh, they're on stage killing it. You know, I got, and some saxophone player right out there, and I was saying, oh, you just have bad technique. Yeah, well, what I'm getting at is that, but there's times when you're really trying to put in that extra work because it doesn't come as naturally to you, that, you know, you people don't see it. I mean, for example, even my hands, like I have, on this left hand, I had to have surgery on it when I was young, and two of my fingers literally move slower than the rest of them. Fortunately, I had a teacher. He didn't give me any slack. He was like, well, you just got to work harder to figure out how to keep up with the rest of the class. And by doing that, putting that mindset in me rather than kind of coddling and being like, well, okay, you know, it's fine. Blah, blah, blah. Before you know it, you move to the top of the class because you're putting in more work than everybody else just trying to keep up. You end up passing them. So I don't think we should not ever underestimate how much actual work we have to do. Because you can have the gift, the natural tendency to be good at something, but that doesn't mean you don't have to put in the work to master the craft. You know what I mean?
So it comes down to behavior.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Behavior. You change your behavior, which includes your mindset, but also your approach, your strategy.
Yeah.
I love it. So the fourth one is the soloist, and they pretty much suffer in silence. They're not sure of pretty much when it comes down to asking for help, right? Who can they trust to ask for help? They might be reluctant to ask for help. And what does that mean? So do you feel firmly Do you firmly feel you need to accomplish things on your own? I don't need anyone's help. Does that sound like you? So do you frame requests in terms of requirements of the project rather than your needs as a person?
Yeah. I mean, this one, I've struggled with this before, personally, but I also think it's something that's ingrained in some of our cultures where a lot of us have had to be the first one to go to college, the first one to get XYZ kind of job, the first one to buy this kind of house. So we're used to starting from zero and building up. Like I saw my parents start from nothing and then build up, you know what I mean? So we think that we always have to be starting back from zero, and you got to do it on your own because, you know, your parents did it on your own. You saw somebody else do it on your own. From the money side, I can tell you something right now. Let me testify real quick. I can tell you something right now. These people, especially the young people out there that you see, a lot of the young people you see out there doing big things and they look like they've gotten it all together, they're not doing it alone. This is the banker telling you right now. I've seen the account transfers. Like they didn't buy that car. They didn't buy that house, a lot of them, at least not alone. I mean, I operate in a world where it's common. I was telling somebody about it the other day, a cousin of mine. It's common in certain parts of the world, in certain social classes and so on, that when you get to 25 years old, your parents gift you a house or gift you a condo or a fancy apartment. This is common. And this is not something odd or unusual. Like you're not getting gifted Michael Jordan shoes. Nobody's giving out blenders and toaster ovens and a gift registry at Target. They're not doing that kind of stuff. They're gifting real estate, right? So when you see someone now and they're 45 years old and they're flying, yeah, because for the last 20 years, they were not paying a mortgage like you were, right? They came in $700,000-$800,000 up in value, didn't have to pay a mortgage. So they were able to put that same $800 or whatever it is a month that you were putting towards your mortgage, they were able to put that into investments that have been compounding for the last 20 years while you were giving it back to whichever bank, right? So people are not doing this stuff alone. When you see people, the other one I've seen a lot is when you see, I don't want to call them silly businesses. When you see these businesses, you ever look at a business and you're like, I don't know how they're making money. Like, how are they paying the rent? Nobody's ever in there. Like, you see these fancy boutiques or these little, just, I call them like frou-frou businesses. I mean, they exist and they're good because, you know, every now and then you want to frou-frou some kind of nonsense. But realistically, you can look at some of these businesses and know that they don't have the customer turnover to really make the kind of money that they need to pay these bills all the time. And you know why that doesn't matter? Because they don't care. Mommy and daddy are bankrolling this thing in the background. Or mommy and daddy know the property owner, so they're not actually paying the real rent that everybody else in that plaza is paying. Or they're not paying rent at all. Like, they're not playing on the same rules like everybody else. That's why they can go out there and launch certain businesses. Oh, I just started this thing. I'm doing that thing. Yeah, because it doesn't matter if it fails or not. Like, you were rich before. If the business works out, you're rich. If the business fails, you're still rich. So they're playing on a different set of rules out there, and they're not doing it alone. I think that's one thing we've got to get out of our heads, that people you see doing it. And don't get me wrong, there are some people out there who came up from the bottom, and we're here. All those kind of, we got to get that came up from the bottom now. We're here. Like, that's cute, but that's not how you build serious wealth. The people you see now, they've been building this wealth from slavery days. They've been building this wealth from factories passed down to land, passed down to investments, passed down to bonds, passed down to compounding interest accounts, passed down to properties that were passed on through a trust rather than directly from one person to the next so that the person who gets it can get the step-up basis without having to pay the tax. This is how this stuff has been built. Not by YOLO, I came up from the bottom, I hustled, you know, I was on the street. Then No. You're not going to win that game. You can't compete with 100 years and 5 generations of compounding. You can't compete. You can't hustle that out. You can try, right? You can try. You'll make some headway, don't get me wrong, but you're not going to win against the person who's in maintenance mode. We talked about this on one episode. If you're just the creator and you're just in that kind of mode, it's really hard to pick up on the person who, if they don't do anything else for the whole year, their bank account and their investments is already going to generate $400,000, $500,000 in dividends before they woke up in the morning and they did any work. If they don't do any, they can wake up and just drink lattes every day and they will still have another $400,000 or $500,000 to invest. You're not going to out-hustle that simply, right? So that's why we got to start thinking empire. We got to start thinking, okay, what am I doing today that my daughter is going to continue tomorrow, that my granddaughter is going to be balling. We got to start thinking like 3, 4, 5 generations down the line. I'm going to start this business because I want to scale it to 10. My daughter's going to scale it to 20 or 25 or 30. Then we're going to sell it to a bigger operator, maintain 40% ownership or maintain 51% ownership. So we have the majority share ownership. We're going to spin off 40% to other person, or we're going to license the brand name, but we're going to keep the shit. If this stuff sounds like Greek, you need to go back and listen to the last 5 episodes, and we need to keep on having some of these conversations, because this is how money that I'm seeing on my side has been built, right? These are the conversations that are happening, and people are not doing this stuff alone. My soapbox is empty. You can go ahead talking.
Okay. You're finishing the season strong. So one thing I want to speak about when it comes to the soloist, and this might not always be recognized, but self-care is very important to me, and mental health is important to me. And sometimes the person that has experienced workplace trauma can become a soloist. Like, they weren't always a soloist, but they become a soloist. They're reluctant to ask for help. They're reluctant to feel that their questions should be answered because they've been through trauma in the workplace. They've been embarrassed or shamed, or someone has ridiculed them for asking questions in the past. And it's like, how do you overcome that, right? Because that can definitely, those experiences can breed imposter syndrome and breed reluctancy and self-doubt. So how do you get over that? One, I definitely think that, you know, affirming that, finding your allies, if it means changing departments or changing roles, that can be another. I feel when you are on the rise to overcome something like that, I say those are the phoenix rising from the ashes moment, where you are getting back to recognize yourself, or maybe you made a decision that wasn't something that was favorable for you in the workplace and there are repercussions for that. Like, you operated out of a place of desperation, or you just weren't fully connected, or you just missed it altogether because life was happening. There's so many different factors of what can cause workplace trauma, what can cause someone to go from an extrovert to an introvert, and then you display characteristics as a soloist. I just say ask for help, find help, find external resources, but by all means, do not give up on yourself. Do not give up on the life that you're creating for yourself. Do not stop pursuing professional experiences that you want to experience, that you need to experience for you to be able to accomplish your next level of professional best. So for me, when I hear the soloist, I think about those people that have had people just, or themselves or whatever. I mean, because there's so many scenarios. I mean, we can't even begin to like go through that. But if what I'm saying connects to you, then there's something that you might know of a friend, or you might know of someone like just in your area of like who you interact with on a daily basis, or a friend or yourself, like definitely have that hard conversation if it needs to be, to figure out what was the source, what was the trigger. If you find yourself being that person, what made you be that way? Are you in a place to course correct? Can you put a plan in place to have you course correct? And what does it look like? Because the one thing about life, we can always re-strategize what our definition of done is and what our definition of best is. So what is that? Like, those are things that we can definitely think about.
Agreed.
Yeah. So the next one is the expert, right? The fifth one and the final one is the expert. And the expert measures a competence based on what and how much they know or can do, believing that they will never know enough. They fear being exposed as inexperienced or unknowledgeable. So some of the questions could be, do you shudder when someone says you're an expert?
I don't want to talk about it. Don't give me that look. Don't look at me like that.
Yep. Are you constantly seeking out trainings or certifications because you think you need to improve your skills in order to succeed?
I'm looking at you with the letters. Anyway, letters on your LinkedIn profile name. Go ahead.
Yes, but I'm not collecting anymore because certifications are not a collection.
They're don't be paper.
Like, hey, George McPherson.
Hey, episode 1.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, this is not the certifications are not baseball cards, right? They cost. They require your time. But they're not. So with that being said, at some point you have to realize you need, I'm actually like clapping over here, like listen here. So at some point you have to recognize whether or not you are in a space of, you need to,
I'm done. Go ahead.
You need to determine whether or not you need to maximize your network to increase your network or your exposure.
True. True.
Who are your allies? What can your circle, I'm going to say, like, look at your circle. Who can you get to? Who do you need to start commenting with on social media? Who do you need to start networking with? What organizations do you need to volunteer? You know, what does that look like for you? Like, what does that look like? I say when you have gotten the validation that you need, whatever that is defined for you, what do you need to do? So I would definitely say your network. The answer to that is demonstrate courage, demonstrate curiosity, and expand your network.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff is so crucial. The network part of it, especially, because again, people are not working alone. People are going to do business. People are going to do things. They're going to promote. They're going to call. They're going to recommend people that they know, like, and trust. And a lot of that comes from within their network. I mean, I've seen situations where when you sit down and really start connecting the dots of who's who and who's doing business, whatever it is, you realize a lot of times it traces back to the same golf club or the same country club or the same whatever. Like, oh, okay, so-and-so is married to this. Oh, so that's his brother-in-law. And then you're like, ah, okay, this is just like a whole little, okay, I see what's happening here. This is a giant family business. That's what this is. You know, oh, we need a so-and-so for the board of directors. Oh, this person is married to so-and-so's sister, so we can bring him on, da-da-da-da. But then you look around, it's this from the center, from the initial person, it's about 2 feet away. It's all the way around, but it's all connected to one little spot. Cause that's what people are doing. I mean, I had to push myself, and I can get really like bogged down in my work. I can turn into the person that's like, I'll sit down and work all night if I'm excited about something and do what I have to do. I can get into the zone of when I leave the office, I don't want to see these people. I don't have the time because I got other things to do and build my dreams and my empire and this and that or other. I had to pull back from that just a little bit and start playing sports with some of the guys on the team and some of the guys on the, not just my team initially, but our counterparts at other companies and other banks and that kind of stuff for the sake of networking. We got into paddle tennis. They dragged me out to paddle tennis. Old me would have been like, listen, I've been with y'all all day, 8 hours. I ain't got time to spend another 2 hours with y'all batting balls around at night. Y'all don't have the same kind of dreams I'm trying to build. And boy, that may or may not be true. But the relationship that you're able to build because you've had that out of the office time, that social time, they feel like they know you a little bit. You have some conversations. You find out some personal things about them. They learn about you a little bit more. When you get back in the office, it's a different kind of thing when if something goes wrong or you're trying to make a project happen, when they know you, then you just being a team member. And those are the kind of things you start happening. You have other recommendations coming out for you to be part of different things. When something pops up and say, hey, do you know anybody who can help us do XYZ? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know a guy. No, he's good. He's good. I mean, he can do the work, but trust me, he's cool. He's cool. Or in Panama, el man está cool. Está bien cool. Está suave. Él sabe cómo hacer la cosa. Pero el man está... Te vas a andar bien. In Spanish, it's like, yeah, you're gonna go good. Like, it's not just about the technical side of it, but yeah, he's a good fit, and you can only get that kind of feeling and get that kind of shout out, that kind of recommendation when you spend the time networking a little bit harder than just doing the technical side of the work. I mean, the crazy thing about networking is that you never know now how that connection that you've built is gonna serve you. For example, I played music with a guy from Antigua, my boy Drastic. That's his artist name. Check him out, by the way. Dope artist. Grammy-nominated songwriter, all that kind of stuff. I played music with Drastic when he was living in the BVI. His wife went to high school with me. We ended up being in a band and doing some music and a bunch of gigs together in BVI. Now I'm 7 years later since our last gig, right? I'm doing cold calls to a bank in his home country. Get on the phone with the guy, and coincidentally, like, hey, the guy's like, have you been here before? Like, yeah, I've been to Antigua before. I got friends from there. I know XYZ. He's like, oh, man, you know Drastic? Yeah, I went to school with him, too. All of a sudden, 3 minutes into a cold call, rapport. Because this guy's like, oh, if you know him, yeah, then you got to be cool. So you never know this networking thing, how the craziness of different random things you do that may seem not connected to your actual professional side. You never know how that stuff is going to actually click in and work well for you. Groovy. All right. So one of the things I wanted to share as well is just the, as we get ready to wrap up here, I wanted to really just go into just for a couple of minutes here on the mindset that I see that we need to make this money, the mindset for money, the mindset for building your skills, because we can talk all day about the technical side of things and what you need to invest in and what courses you need to take and what skills you need to build and all that kind of stuff. But moving to the next level, and I can feel this even right now, and I'm sure you can agree, as we're trying to stretch and push ourselves to that next level, it requires a certain level, a new level of mental toughness. It requires you to raise your baseline, right? A friend of mine who's a runner, he was telling me about this. When you just start out, you know, your baseline heart rate might be this, and that's when you feel like you're really working hard. As you get more and more into it, you get used to feeling that kind of drive, and that doesn't feel like a challenge to you. And you keep on going up and going up. You're learning how to sustain more of a load without becoming stressed to the point where you can't function. It's not that you're not stressed, but you're learning how to deal with more responsibility and more pressure and more deliverables. And you learn how to do it not just by sitting back and suffering through the craziness, but you develop different techniques. You learn how to delegate more. You learn how to be more organized. You learn how to say no. You learn how to deal with rejection better. You know, when you're starting out, that first no, or even worse, especially if you're in the job world, that first ghost, when you apply for a job and they said, we'll make selections by whatever, February, end of February, and you're there refreshing your email on February 27th, 28th. Oh, then you're like March, you're like, oh, well, you know, it's a Sunday. They're probably just gonna send it out the next day. When you get that first, I think the ghost is actually worse than the no. I would rather get the no than just the, did I not hit submit properly? Maybe it was a glitch when I uploaded I don't like that. But you have to learn how to deal with those no's, or the actual hard no can be hard sometimes. The quantity of no's, you got to learn how to develop that resilience no matter what it is you're trying to push, whether it's that you're trying to ask for a raise, if you're trying to book a deal with a client. You got to learn how to take those things as learning moments, take those things and just let it roll off, right? Take the feedback if it's something you need to adjust and improve, and see it as a sport. I've taken this whole money game, this whole business game on now as a game, literally like a game. Like, okay, I need to play around and figure out different strategies. And I saw this with my dad growing up. This is a guy who came up, started out baking bread with his mom at 4 o'clock in the morning and selling it, and just like came up super poor doing what he had to do. Everything from raising goats and everything. Then he moved up to being a butcher in a little store. Then he ended up being a banker. Next thing you know, this guy, I've seen pictures with this guy in New York working for Barclays with two phones through his ear, Wolf of Wall Street style doing trading. Got fed up with that, opened his own businesses and da-da-da, worked his way up. But that's because he took it on almost as a sport. So yes, every move you make, if you're playing a sport, every shot you shoot is not going to go in. That doesn't mean you fall out of love with the game. That doesn't mean you quit. I mean, we've got time. Until you've died, you've got time, and you're going to keep on playing the game. You adjust your strategy and doing that kind of stuff. But if you take it as every time, imagine if you were playing basketball. Imagine if LeBron James or whatever sport you like, is, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo, whatever sport you like. Imagine if the top players you know, and they're playing the sport, and they shoot a shot or they try to make a goal or they try to hit the ball, whatever it is, and they miss, and they throw a tantrum and walk off the court. They don't play for the rest of the game. You imagine how ridiculous that would look? You would think they're crazy. So my question is, why are you doing it? Why are we doing
that? That comes to growth, though. That comes to growth and just recognizing the ebbs and flows of what being great is. There's a stretch. You recognize yourself. You know, emotional intelligence plays a big part, right? And what that looks like. So you have to factor emotional intelligence in when you're doing that. And are you able to hold it? Let someone finish their thought. Are you able to maintain your temperament? What does that look like for you?
Yeah. And this is not saying that you don't get upset. This is not trying to fake it and be like, you don't get upset, you don't feel sad. No, this is not what we're saying. We're talking about being able to own that feeling for the time and function through that, or function after that. Not let it take you out completely. It might bump you off course. It might shake you a little bit. But the point is learning how to push through those things, those failures, those ups and downs, those disappointments, whatever it is, so that you can get to that point. I mean, every investment that you make, I've seen clients, I mean, right now, If you want to talk about disappointments and current events, open the stock. I'm going to put it in the show notes. If you go to like the FinViz heat map right now that shows the S&P 500, or you go to any kind of stock market charts this week, it's a bloodbath. Between the craziness that's going on over in Ukraine, the Fed not being exactly clear about what they want to do with interest rates. Are we getting one hike, 10 hikes? What exactly y'all plan to, what's the game plan here? People don't know exactly. There's a whole bunch of uncertainty in the market right now. Oil producing countries like Russia are in the middle of a whole bunch of craziness. People don't know what's going on. Oil prices are going up, which means gas prices are going up, which means shipping prices are going up, which means prices on consumer products are about to go up. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on right now. But if you're the kind of investor who's going to freak out about that to the point where you're going to quit investing, you're not going to win in the game. And we own the fact that it's been a disaster this week, but we're still in the game, right? You don't lose until you stop playing. Like you can call it overtime, triple overtime, whatever you want to call it, but you got to stay in the game and keep on playing and making the moves to the point where you can get to the success that you want to get to. So that from the mindset perspective, that's definitely one thing I want to leave with our family here tonight. As we wrap up this series, the only way you're going to win in this money mindset game, in this business game, in this financial education game, the skills game, right, is understanding that it is indeed a game of strategy, and you got to fall in love. I sound like an old hip hop movie or something. You got to fall in love with the game more than the results. You know what I mean? Or whatever it is they say. You really do have to fall in love with the art of doing the work. I mean, I see this with my wife all the time. Like, she's a lawyer. Super high power lawyer, but sometimes I see her fighting through some complicated transaction or a case and this and that, and they figured out. I'm like, you like this stuff, don't you? Like you're stressed, but you enjoy. I can see it in her face deep down inside. Like, you enjoy, like, fighting with people and like under. I don't want to put it that way, but you enjoy the back and forth of trying to figure out how to get a transaction done. What's the best way to figure out this thing? And you know this person they want to go left, so you got to go right, and you got to pivot. You actually enjoy the actual game of this. You know, you want to get to that point where you're doing something where you enjoy the game, you enjoy the struggle and the strategy of it so much that you'll keep on playing even when it's during the disappointing moments, and you can have an even better time during the good moments.
For sure. For sure. So we're so grateful for everyone that has joined us for season one of Money and Skills with Dallin and Michelle. And I just want you to keep your stride. And I want you to definitely keep your stride, but keep your skills recharged and be consistent about it. I want you to walk away with this season one, knowing where you fall on the money line and how to get closer to the money line and how to maximize your time with the money line when it comes to your skills, right? So I want you to challenge yourself to identify a new skill to add to your skills arsenal that will catapult you to your next level. I want you to identify another stream of income that your skills can bring for you and what you need to make that happen. And I also want you to figure out your best lesson and how to, your one of your biggest regrets that you made a lesson and how to repurpose that as you move forward into a skill that not can only help you get to another level within yourself of development, but help someone else, because helping others helps you because you're teaching, which reconfirms what you know and how you can help make your workplace and the different vendors or people that you work with help impact their environment as well to make it a conducive, productive environment across the board.
Awesome. I think those are awesome shares that people can definitely take away from the past five episodes. Again, be sure to go back and check out the ones we've shared over the past couple of weeks, episodes 1 through 5, there's a lot of gems in there, and the most detailed show notes in the business put together by Michelle with all your resources, timestamps. Oh, I mean, what more can you ask for? Like, she's got timestamps with the different hot points, the topics, resources, you know, just everything that you would need, links, all that kind of stuff that you're hearing, it's all in there. So be sure to go back and check that out. From my side, I definitely want everybody to make sure they're getting to the point where you're financially organized, you're financially free enough to where you can quit that job if you want to, and you're there because you want to be there, not because you're slave or hostage, but to that one paycheck all the time. So we want to make sure we get this money together, get our investments together, get our side businesses together and everything, so that we're living a life of financial freedom where we can make the choices about what we want to do based on what we actually want to do, not just based on what we can afford. from all of us here at Money and Skills with Dallin and Michelle, and by all of us, I do mean just me and Michelle. We're wishing you all so much success this year, and hopefully we can keep in contact with you all. Please jump into the DMs, slide into the DMs over on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm everywhere at Dallin Vanderpool. Michelle, I know you've got a couple of different. Where can we find Skills for Charge on social media?
Facebook, LinkedIn. LinkedIn is my suite where like everything just rolls fluidly. So stay with me on LinkedIn. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube for sure. So yeah, thanks.
Awesome.
Keep in touch. Check us out. Let us know how we can help you.
Absolutely. Check us out. Let us know what's going on. Drop your questions. And if the things that you want us to come back on and talk about at some point, if you want it, you know, you got to let us know. You got to speak up. We're not going to do it if nobody says anything. So y'all got to slide into the DMs, jump in the comment section, email, Snapchat, you know, SMS, whatever. Send a pigeon with a note on the leg, on the pinky toe, whatever you got to do, get the message to us. But from all of us over here, wishing you a lot of success this year. Remember to stay profitable and have a powerful week. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.